All right, so we're going to go ahead and get started. If you can make your way in, I'm going to go ahead and pray. We're going to go ahead and get started. Join me in a word of prayer. Okay? Father, thank you so much just for the opportunity just to come to hear your word on the first day of the week. We just pray that, you know, that as we learn these life lessons from a servant of yours, I just pray that it touches our hearts, move us to action. In your son's name we pray. Amen. All right. So we're going to go ahead and get started. And good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I'm glad that you guys are here. So this is our numbers class as it continues. We appreciate everyone who went before us to teach us through the book of Numbers. And so before we get started, I'm just going to go ahead and just break the ice a little bit. All right, so I have an icebreaker question for us. Okay, what is your favorite life story about an individual, either fictional or non-fictional, that has inspired you throughout history? Who is that person? Steve? Sorry, say it again.
Rhodo Baggett.
Okay.
Jane Eyre.
Jane Eyre. Okay, cool. All right, so the next question. Oh, sorry, Zach?
Job.
Yeah. Okay. Job is good. I say for myself, I would say two guys I really look up to. One would be Alexander the Great, right, and Bruce Lee. The reason why I say these guys, because I can connect with them. I'm in my young 30s or early 30s, and these guys did tremendous things in their 30s, in their early 30s, that was incredible. But and I just thought that was fascinating. All right, so my next question is, what is your favorite movie about the life of Moses? I know we have some people who are in here like movies, but what is your favorite?
Prince of Egypt.
Prince of Egypt, okay. Ten Commandments, okay. All right, cool. So we're going to get started. I think my favorite, obviously, would be the Ten Commandments, too. You know, I think that was an incredible animation. I don't think anything else came to it, but all the rest of them, like, this one, not good, not at all. So today, we're going to talk about a life story. We're going to talk about the life story of Moses, a life story of the life of Moses. And interesting, he is coined or ascribing to being the most humble man who has ever lived, right? So I'm your servant teacher today. And I'd be gladly to walk us through the life of Moses. Okay? Are you guys still with me?
Yes.
All right, great. All right, so we're going to look at the life of Moses. This is our objective for today. We're going to be looking at Moses' credentials. So Moses has a resume, and we're going to look at that resume. All right, we're going to also look at the life of Moses. We're also going to look at the tethering of two stories. For those who don't know what tethering means, it's a way of connecting two devices together. So tethering or connecting two stories. And also, for us to tether our lives accordingly. So we have some great stuff in there for us all, some practical application. All right. So we're going to look at Moses' resume. Okay. Moses lived to be 120 years old. That's a long time. That's pretty old. But Moses was a leader, priest, and prophet, right? And Moses was the author of five books, right? Which is called the Pentateuch. Penna is five, tuk is scroll. So I like what it said here. It says, after writing the bestseller of Genesis, Exodus, and Leviticus, Moses felt confident he was obvious as he penned the books of Numbers. So it's interesting is that Numbers 12:3, it said that he was the most humble man who's ever lived. Why do you think Moses was the most humble man who has ever lived? Any others? Shannon? Wow, leaning a lot on God. Somebody else had another hand?
Yeah, I think, you know, God had to break him.
God had to break him.
You know, to show him because when he was, you know, kind of arrogant. But after God broke him, he realized his
community. Excellent. Okay, good take. Lastly, Alan.
I think that he got to see God face to face, and that's what it was.
Seeing God face to face, that would have been an incredible experience. That's really incredible. I'm going to tell you, well, and also about his resume, what we notice is that he influenced billions. Billions. Jews, Muslims, and Christians. He's in the Quran. He's in the Torah, which is the Old Testament. And he's also in the Bible, but he's a lawgiver in all three of these books. Moses is very influential. So this guy influenced billions. But also he was a megachurch leader. 2 million people in attendance. Imagine that you were leading ACOCG and it was 2 million people. How would you feel about taking that job? And also there's no 401k with that at all. How would you feel about doing that? Right? Kind of hard. But thank God for Jethro. Okay. So Moses was inducted into the Hall of Fame of Faith. Today we would say enshrined, right? Like a shrine. Back then we couldn't say that about Jesus, that he was, I mean about Moses, that he was enshrined, because they couldn't have shrines. But he was inducted into the Hall of Fame of Faith in Hebrews 11. And we're going to reference that back as well. Okay? So that's his resume. So now we're going to look at the life story of Moses, birth through 40. So we're going to look at this in life stages. So we're going to look at life in Egypt. Okay, so at the time of Moses' birth, right? At the time of Moses' birth, fear and a malicious influence prompted Pharaoh to oppress the Israelites, right? And to kill all infants at birth by casting them into the Nile, right? So a malicious influence, you know, Ephesians 6, our battle is not against flesh and blood. There was something going on behind that. But also at his birth, interesting. Just imagine if this Pharaoh actually, you know, succeeded in his plan of wiping out all the infants, you know. Just imagine, what's the likelihood of what happened? The likelihood, not say that it's, I mean, all things are possible with God, but the Messiah may not be born. But it's possible that he'd be born because God, all things are possible with God. But you can see that it was almost, you know, thank God for the midwives that kind of helped that. But they were cast into the Nile. Back then in Egypt, they were polytheist, which means they worshiped many gods, but they considered the Nile a god, possibly, but also they worshiped the god of the Nile, and his name was Hapi, H-A-P-I. And this god was the god of the Nile. And the interesting thing about this god is that he did not have like a shrine, so in a way for people to barter with this god, they would throw things into the Nile to barter with the god, to get the god to do what he wants them to do. And also, he's in control of flooding, or what they call inundation, which is flooding. So, long story short, if flooding was low, that's not a good thing, because nothing would grow. If flooding was too high on the Nile, then that's a bad thing, because everything gets destroyed. They wanted the flooding to be just right, like the Goldilocks rule. They wanted it to be just right, so things could grow. So, the way they would barter with this god to make things grow, they would throw things into the Nile. So, hence, it's possible that the Hebrew children was part of that ordeal back in the day. It's possible. Are you guys still with me? Okay. So also by faith, Moses' parents in Hebrew 6, Yahabed and Amram was Moses' parents. By God's providence. I like it says God's providence, God's guiding hand. That's what Hebrews 11, 23 states, that Moses was able to escape the infanticide because of God's providence, God's mighty hand. It was the midwives and all the great stuff that God was working through, right? And then also Moses. Okay, Moses' name means draw out of water, right? But it was not his mother that named him, but it was his adopted mother or Pharaoh's daughter who named him and raised him in royalty. That's interesting. So you can see God is at work. He's using these people. He's using the midwives. He's also using Pharaoh's daughter to preserve a life, which is Moses. Okay, so from palace to the slave pits, Moses chose to visit his people, and I like that. Because in Acts 7, it talks about it was laid on Moses' heart, or he decided to visit his people. He decided to do something, right? And I wonder what prompted his heart. I wonder how that got there, right? He was either woke before then or afterwards. But the reality of the situation, when he chose to visit his people from the palace to the slave pits, you know, he got into a fight, right? It's probably his first fight. I don't know. I don't know if you guys remember your first fight, but Moses, this is Moses' fight. And the interesting thing that we all know how the story went down, how Moses saw one of the Hebrews, we all know that part. But one thing that you do not know, probably do, probably don't, but in Acts chapter 7, 23, makes it very clear, or through 25, makes it very, very, very clear that Moses, when Moses got in, when Moses saw the mistreatment, and he, when he killed the Egyptian, he wanted them to see that I'm your deliverer. I'm trying to get you out of your situation. So Moses was trying to do that, but he'd done this not on God's willing, but his own will. And we also see the story in Exodus 2. But Moses flees Egypt, right? So he flees Egypt. So now we're going to look at the life of Moses, 41, through age 41. And also, FYI, Moses was 40 years old when he flees Egypt. So he's about 40 at that time. So he's 40. So from Egypt to life in Midian, we're going to look at that. So in Egypt, Moses fought and took a life. But in Midian, he fought shepherds and took a life. We can see that story in Exodus 2 and Acts 7 and Hebrews 11. So I think this is how it kind of went down. Since Moses killed the Egyptian, I think this was how the fight scene went down. I think Moses, since Moses knows kung fu, he hit the guy with the stick, hi-ya, right? And then next thing you know, the guy on the ground said, okay, I'm going to feel that in the morning, right? And then the guy on the other guy said, hey, we got to get out of here. And then I already know what Yahabed was, Zipporah was thinking. I got dibs. That's my man. That's what she was probably thinking. But I'm just assuming that's what God, I'm just trying to be creative here. But yeah. All right, cool. All right, now we're going to look at the life of Moses, not in Midian. So a great experience, a great encounter with God here. He says, now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flocks to the far side of the wilderness and came to the Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When Yahweh saw that he had gone over to look, God called from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. In verse 13, Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and to say to them, the God of your fathers have sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? Then what should I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. All right. So now we continue on to, you know, Midian, to Moses' life in Midian, right? From Egypt to life in Midian. So it's interesting that Moses became a shepherd to sheep, but later Yahweh, or the angel of the Lord, appeared to him to return back to Egypt to deliver his people, and he will shepherd them, right? So interesting thing there is that we see that Yahweh, which is right here, Yod Heh Vav Heh, which means Yahweh. So the interesting thing behind that is that Yahweh means to be, or it means he will be. That's what it actually means. It's not Jehovah, but it's Yahweh. And which means is that God's existence does not depend on anyone else's. Our existence depends on our parents. But God's existence depends on no one else. So the category. So when people say who made God, it's a category mistake. It's an error. Because God doesn't have, his existence, he's self-existent, which means that his existence doesn't depend on anyone else. But it says the angel of the Lord. This is interesting because who is the angel of the Lord? Really unique figure. Very unique figure. Because the angel of the Lord, it says the angel of the Lord, which is something unique about him, which means that it's a definite article, which states that the angel of the Lord, which is saying that he's unique. So an angel in Hebrew is malak, which means messenger. So which means that this is a spiritual being that is a messenger, but yet unique. But the interesting thing about the angel of the Lord is that when you read Exodus, it's like, okay, is God, is this an angel sent by Yahweh or Yahweh himself? When you read, when we just read, you say, okay, was that Yahweh or an angel sent by Yahweh? You almost tend to think between the two, right? But it's interesting because the angel of the Lord, if you go back to read Genesis 22 or in a few other passages, it's like the angel of the Lord speaks as if he's Yahweh, but also speak distinct from Yahweh. So you almost see that thing going on. So I want to invite you into a paradox, right? How many of you guys are homeowners, right? Homeowners, right? Do you really own that home or does the bank own it? Right? It's both. You don't go to your house and say, this is my bank's home. You know what I mean? No, you don't say that. It's both. It is, but it isn't. That's what a paradox is. So, and let me, with that paradox, it's interesting because in the New Testament, who says they are the I am in the New Testament? Who says that? Jesus, right? In John 8:58, before Abraham was I am. And that's why they try to stone him, because they know exactly what he's saying. So, but it's interesting, the paradox is that we see this in the New Testament, and this helps resolve the issues with John 1:1 and John 1:18, is that this was Yahweh. So in other words, this was Yahweh, which is a Christophany, which is, let me explain what that means. I know it's kind of a word that you guys are not used to hearing, but it's almost saying that this is Christ in the Old Testament. This is pre-incarnated Christ in the Old Testament, right? So this is what he was doing before he was incarnated. So the reality is that we see this as being the angel of the Lord. This is God's fine way of connecting with us without killing us, because no one can see God's face and what? Live, exactly. So that's what's going on there. All right, so let me bring this all together. Leviticus 11:45, it says that Yahweh delivered the people from Egypt. Interesting. Well, that's no surprise. But in Judges chapter 2, verses 1, the angel of the Lord said he delivered the people from Egypt. But we go to the New Testament, which is fascinating. Jude, verse 5, said that it was Jesus that delivered the people from Egypt. But the interesting thing there is that most earlier manuscripts support Jesus' name being there, but it depends on the translation you read. Some part says Lord, but it could be Jesus. But the ESV, which uses a lot of the older manuscripts, supports that it was Jesus. So the angel of the Lord is that. So we'll move on. Okay, so but how did Moses respond to the mission? How did he respond when he was called by God? That's an open question. How did he respond, Shannon?
I didn't read your notes, but his initial response was he was hesitant. He was like, God, why are you choosing me? I can't do this.
Yep, he was hesitant. Alex? Pick someone else, right? Well, don't we all do that sometimes, right? But the interesting thing is, you know, I can relate too, because sometimes I can feel very inadequate just about, God, I'm not smart enough. I'm not the best speaker. I can like all these different things. Somebody else is a better speaker than I am. He's more taller, whatever the case may be. But how did God prepare him for the mission? How did God prepare him for it? God prepared him. How did he do it? Right. Do not be afraid. Exactly. One of the ways that he said this, here's one of the things. God, in Exodus 4:16, it says, God said to Moses, Aaron will speak to the people for you, and he will be your spokesman, and you will be like God. Interesting. So figuratively, you'll be like God, and Aaron's your spokesman. So in other words, he said, I'm going to send you Aaron. Aaron will be there for you. So this is the lesson here about one another relationships. Do you have one of those people in your life that you get with, to talk with about things, to help you with your mission that God has laid on your heart? So it's important for one another relationships. Okay? Are you guys still with me?
Yeah.
Okay. So Moses finally returned to God as God's chosen instrument by returning back to Egypt, right? So it's interesting is because Moses at this age, he was 80 years old. So that's a lesson there. It doesn't matter how mature you are, you can still be used as God's chosen instrument. You can never check out spiritually. God comes going to call you at 80, and at the end, you're going to see Moses was still doing God's work at 120. So that's a lesson here for all of us. All right, moving on. All right, so here. So in other words, Moses' life from 81 to 120. So God, through Moses, brought 10 plagues. Interesting. Okay, in John 1:1, what did God say 10 times? He said something 10 times. God said, let there be 10 times to create order from disorder, right? But interesting, God used 10 plagues to bring disorder on an orderly Egypt through the plagues. And each plague was aimed at the Egyptian god. Hapi, remember the god of the Nile, turned into blood. So it was a reback of that, or Amun-Ra, make it dark, you know, that type of thing. But Yahweh also executed judgment against the gods of Egypt. I don't have enough time to unpack that, but here's some hints of what that means. I don't have enough time to unpack it, but I would gladly, if you want to talk to me more about it, I would gladly do. Okay, so Moses and the Israelites were delivered from bondage by the waters of the sea. And I like it, is because delivered, and that Hebrew word is yeshad. And what it means is saved. They were saved, right, from bondage. They were saved from sinful men, but they were saved by water. Interesting ramification there. But it's interesting, a little bit later on, in the next chapter, in chapter 15, we really see that salvation was used through the first time in Exodus. Salvation. And that word is Yeshua. Interesting. So they sing a praise of salvation. So it's amazing. We sing to God. Not about ourselves, but we sing to God because what God has done for us. Amen? But we ask ourselves, what sea? You know, this is the biggest thing, because in Hebrew, the Red Sea is in Hebrew, red is Edom, right? But sea is Suf. But that text there in Exodus chapter 14, it's Yam Suf, which means Sea of Reeds. So most people think the Sea of Reeds, or liberal scholars think it's 3 feet deep, you know, I don't buy it. But because we look at 1 Kings 9:26, Solomon built ships on the Sea of Reeds. So it's more than 3 feet deep. So here's the route that they may have took from Succoth, through Moses led the people through Succoth, all the way down. Oh, I'm sorry, going to get this pointer. Succoth all the way down to here and all the way to the Promised Land. But the long story short, the Sea of Reeds and the Reed Sea used to be one sea. So, in other words, the reality of the situation, it was the Reed Sea went into the Red Sea, which is one sea. So, it's both. So, if you have time to think about it, this takes a lot to think about it. If you don't get it the way, just put it on the bookshelf and think about it. All right. So, we're going to move on a little bit further. So, the life of Moses, 81 through 120. So, as we know, Moses shepherds 2 million people. At least what some people agree, some people disagree with it. But also, Moses delivered the Ten Commandments from Mount Sinai, plus 103 in the wilderness. So this is 613 commands. That's a lot of commands. I don't know about you. I can barely keep six, you know what I mean? Not 613. That's a lot. But the way that we can categorize these commandments, right, the way we can categorize it is this, really simple, is that there's three categories we realize, is that you have the civil laws, like since they were under a patriarchal society, in which it was almost like a church-state society, a theocracy, what people would say. But it was the reality of the situation. They had civil laws, the do's and not do's when dealing with your fellow Israelite. Secondly, you had the ceremonial laws. Okay, clean, unclean, what to eat, not to eat, right? And how to approach God, right? Ceremonial laws. And lastly, you had the moral law, which reflects the nature of God. Which means that it transcends culture or whatever. So, but the interesting, these are all the words of God. All categories are the words of God. But only one out of the three is the law of God for us today. And that's the moral law. That's why you see them being transmitted into the New Testament. That's why you see that. So the moral law, thou shalt not kill, you see that being in the New Testament. Some other laws you don't see being in the New Testament there. Are you guys with me? How you guys are doing? Good. All right, so here, Moses' sin. This is interesting. Israel's sin, not Moses, but we're going to get there too. Israel's sin. So Moses was on the mountain getting these laws, getting the stuff about the tabernacle, which is a lot of theological stuff there that I can't unpack today. But interesting thing is that when Moses was on the mountain for 40 days, you know, Israel was like, hey, what happened to Moses? And they said, oh, it's party time. And they had a party. And he said, and Aaron said, hey, take off your bling, take off your stuff, and I'll make you a god. And poof, there it came out the fire. That's what he said. Poof, I put it together, and poof, it came out. But when Moses came down from the mountain, he was ticked. And so, but Moses had a solution to that. And what Moses thought is like, hey, whoever's on God's side, side with me. And who did was the Levites. The Levites sided with it. Now, Moses said, hey, slaughter them. So they slaughtered them. And the slaughtering was about 3,000. Ah, interesting. Keep in mind, Moses was on the mountain for 40 days, but 10 days ago, they celebrated Passover. So 50 days later from Passover is the day of Pentecost. Wow, interesting. 3,000 in Pentecost. What story does this relate to in the New Testament? Exactly. Exactly. So you see the connection there. And you go, and then, but interesting is Moses, the mediator, I like to call Moses the mediator, he actually goes there and say, God, can you repent or relent? He said, God, can you relent? And God does. I would like to talk to you more about that, but I can't unpack that either. But the reality is there's a lot more there. But Moses was still that a mediator. He intervened between them. But interesting is that Moses said, Lord, black out your name out of your book instead. Do the blocking, black out my name instead of theirs. You see the heart of a shepherd there, right? That's the heart of a shepherd. But God said, no, I don't agree with the action, but the heart I agree with. But who had this heart in Rome, who had this book in the New Testament other than Jesus? It was actually Paul. Paul had the same heart. Go back to read Romans 9. He had the same heart. So we have a heart of a shepherd, willing to connect with the people, willing to also lay down your life for the people as well. But Moses had an intimate relationship with God, really close, very warm, right? But they had FaceTime, not like the phones. I know that's what we're kind of thinking. But he saw God's glory, right? How would you like to see God? Isn't that amazing? But here, God will always forgive, but sin has consequences. So you see Moses with his stick, right? God told him to speak to the rock opposed to striking the rock. Previously, God told him to strike it, but through frustration, he struck the rock opposed to speaking to it, right? So the reality is Moses did not enter into the promised land. And we look at this story, and it's interesting because why did God not allow him? The root reason, if you go back to read Numbers 20, verse 12, it says this. It says, Moses, you did not act reverently, right? You did not act holy. And at the same time, you did not trust me. So there's a lot of lessons. When we get, you know, frustrated with our kids, I know, you know, we're all working on it. I know I'm working on it. I'm praying through it. But it's learning to say, hey, not to take matters in your own hands when people tick you off, right? So there's a lot of lessons there that we can get in there. When people tick you off, do you trust God or do you take matters in your own head and use your kung fu when you shouldn't? All right. But did Moses really enter the promised land? That's the big question. Did he really enter? All right. Let's look at this scripture here. So God's grace is amazing because we see something interesting. Okay. Luke 9, 28 through 31. It says, about 8 days later, Jesus took Peter, John, and James up on a mountain to pray. And as he was praying, the appearance of his face was transformed and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly, two men, Moses and Elijah, appeared and began talking with Jesus. And they were glorious to see. And they were speaking about his exodus from the world, which was about to be fulfilled in Jerusalem. Interesting stuff. So Moses is in the promised land with Jesus. But the interesting thing is you see a reverse, because on the mountain, the I Am was speaking to him about his exodus with his people. But now you see it the other way around where Moses is talking about his exodus from the world. It's like interesting. Wow, this is phenomenal. But I don't think it looked like this, though, by the way. I think it looked like this. I think this is how it really looked, right? If I didn't put names on it, I'll tell you the truth. This right here would look like Alan Rouse, and that one looked like a few other brothers. I was like, well, let me just put names on it so people won't, you know, say anything. But, well, yeah, that's right. Alan French. That's where he was. Okay. But we're going to talk about tethering of two stories. The life of Moses points us to Christ. This is really big stuff. All right. So Deuteronomy 18, God said he would raise up a prophet like him, like Moses, right? And you can see the fulfillment of that. Peter said that was Jesus in Acts 3. But also in John 5:46, it says Moses wrote about Jesus. Interesting. Nice stuff there. All right, so now that we're going to look at the topology. A topology is almost like a prophecy, but almost lived out in the fulfillment of a future individual. That's what all that is. So we're going to look at Moses and Jesus. Okay, so Moses and Jesus was both delivered from death from a cruel king at their birth. They both were, right? Exodus 1, Matthew 2, we see that. Okay, humility, right? In Numbers 12:5, the Hebrew word there is a nav, which is almost like saying having like a lowly mindset. And almost the context is interesting because Moses chose to have a servant attitude when people were talking about him, his sisters. He didn't go like a royal individual and say, okay, you talk about me, you're done. But he had a servant mindset. He was willing to tolerate things, right? And also, he was willing to go from royalty to a servant. And then we go to, and also, he either ascribed to himself as being humble, or some people say that another scribe put that in there for him. Either or, it doesn't bother me. But the reality of the situation is this, is that, you know, he was a humble individual, or meek. But Jesus is also humble in Philippians 2, right? We see that. And also, he said, you know, he went from royalty, right? He was a royal in heaven, and then he come down to be our servant, right? And then also in Matthew 11:29, he said that he was humble, you know? He makes that very clear. And then also, Moses came out of Egypt, passed through water into the wilderness 40 years in the wilderness, and you see that in the Torah. And also, he came out of Egypt, passed through water into the wilderness for 40 days. You see that in the gospel with Jesus. All right. And then also, Moses delivered divine commands from a mountain, right? Jesus delivered the Beatitudes from a mountain on how disciples should live as kingdom citizens in Matthew 5. So you see this mountain thing going on. But, and also as well, they both had intimate relationship with God. They both did. Moses figuratively God. Jesus was literally God. Wow, interesting. They both performed miracles, right? Plenty of scriptures support that. And then also, Moses was a mediator between God and Israel. Jesus was our mediator between us and God. Wow, fascinating. So now we can see that Jesus is the new Moses, but better. All right, so in other words, we're going to talk about some practical applications here. Tethering our lives accordingly. Humility. Humility and resisting desire from comfortability to serve others and God. But I like what C.S. Lewis said. Humility is not thinking of less of yourself. It is thinking of yourself less. Interesting. And that's what Moses and Jesus had. Okay, now here's the thing. This is how our narrative and our lives are acted out as. Jesus is our Passover, the cross, right? We're led out of Egypt, the bondage of sin, right? And then we're passed through the waters of baptism, salvation, as we talked about. And then also, we are currently, after becoming a Christian, God doesn't beam you up into heaven. He says, no, you have to go through the wilderness to prepare him for himself. That's what this whole thing is all about, is to prepare God for you and also for you to persevere on this wilderness journey. And then also, we're on our way to our destination, God reconnecting with us. That's the destination. That's what this all is all about. You guys are still with me? All right, cool. And then also, this is, I would say, an intimate relationship with God, FaceTime with God. Do you have FaceTime with God? Do you connect with God? Or do you wait to come to church to get FaceTime with God? Do you take the time to say, hey, you know what? I want to connect with God. Like Psalms 42 says, you know, as a deer pants for streams of water, where can I go and meet with God? Right? Do you have your closet space, or do you have your nature, whatever the case may be? Do you take time to connect with God? And then also imitators of God. Ephesians 5, verses 1 makes it clear. As dearly loved children, you know, live a life of love. As imitators of God, live a life of love. So the way we can imitate God is by loving each other. How's that going? But also, I want to talk about the mediators. I think the ministries of reconciliation. Okay, God, and so I think the ministry of reconciliation, someone who to intervene, right? I think 2 Corinthians 5:20, you know, Paul makes it very clear. He talked to the church in Corinth. He said, hey, I implore you on God's behalf, get right with God. So Paul is telling telling Christians to get right with God. So ministries of reconciliation can be, hey, you helping someone else to get right with God, who is a Christian, right? But also, I think the principle is Galatians 6:1, make sure, you know, that you're not tempted. Make sure that you may not be, you know, you better be doing well yourself spiritually. You get reconciled with God as well. And then secondly is one another relationships. You know, I think that as Christians, we collide, we bump heads. There's many different people that, you know, who step in our shoes. You know, even our spouses. You know, I thank God for the popes who have been there for us, my wife and I, to help us sort through situations, which is great. People in our lives have been, many other people in our lives through the times we've been married. And, you know, so one another relationships, you know, but also Matthew 18 is there too as well. But the reality of the situation, we need someone to intervene sometimes. So that's a way that you can practice being a mediator. Secondly, I say congregations. I like what it says in John 17:25. This is Jesus' prayer, the Lord's prayer. And what he said that was powerful, he said, the world will know that the Father has sent me is based on their unity. So he said, the world would know that the Father has sent me based on the unity of disciples. Right? So, and I like to share, this is a quick story about the church here in Gainesville. They were in the same zip code. And long story short, these two different churches, they didn't like each other at all. But someone intervened and said, hey, you know, can you guys work it out? Maybe you guys are better together than apart, right? There's many success stories like this. I know about a story like this in Gwinnett County of a church, of a Baptist church and a Pentecostal church. Somebody intervened and they end up working it out. But the reality of the situation is that I don't agree with the doctrinal stances, but the reality is that I agree with that they're willing to cooperate with each other, right? And then also the lost, because when we have more disciples, we can take on the world together. There's a lot of work to be done. In other words, we can work as mediators of helping non-Christians to be Christians, to get right with God, right? So in closing, we looked at Moses' life, the most humble man who has ever lived. We looked at Moses' credentials. We looked at the life of Moses from birth to 120. And we also looked at the tethering of two stories, Moses and Jesus, and also tethering our lives accordingly, some practical application. Well, and these are my sources that I worked on here. And lastly, I don't have time for Q&A. I would love to do Q&A, but see me in the audience. I would love to talk with you. But I would say, go deliver your kids from captivity.